Hello, listeners. Welcome to another exciting episode of Standing Post with your host, Cody Starkin. This month, we bring you someone from the Muscogee Creek Nation who began his career in the Secret Service in 1997 as a special agent in the Tulsa, Oklahoma City Resident Office. Since then, he has worked on the Dignitary Protective Detail, Secretary of Treasury Detail, and Vice Presidential Protective Detail. Our guest was also selected as a Special Emphasis Program Manager for Native Americans throughout the Secret Service. He has served in this role since 2010, where he is responsible for identifying agency policies, procedures, and practices that adversely impact Native Americans within the Secret Service. In 2015, he was transferred to the Oklahoma City Field Office, where he currently resides as the backup supervisor for the Oklahoma Financial and Electronic Crimes Task Force. We do have one quick show note, though. This particular episode was recorded at the Oklahoma City Field Office while on another project. You'll hear some maintenance going on in the background, which was occurring on another floor of the building. We do apologize for the sound, but it doesn't interrupt the interview in any way. So without further delay, please welcome Senior Special Agent Willie Wind. Special Agent Willie Wind, I appreciate you coming out here, or I should say me coming out to Oklahoma City, but like with every guest that I have on the show, do you mind introducing yourself and telling the listeners what you do for the Secret Service?
Okay. I'm Senior Special Agent William Wind. I started here in Oklahoma City in 1997. From here, I went from Tulsa, where I was there until 2001 conducting investigations. Then after the campaign year, which I was on the Joseph Lieberman detail, I got selected for the polygraph program and was transferred down to Houston, Texas, where I spent 5 years down there as a polygraph examiner. Then went from Houston, Texas to D.C., where I spent 6 months on the Treasury detail. Then after that, I was reassigned to the Vice Presidential Protective Division for 4 years, then Recruiting Division for 5 years thereafter. And in 2015, I returned to Oklahoma City, where currently I'm the backup supervisor for the Oklahoma City Financial and Electronic Crimes Task Force.
And where did you grow up? You know, where did you call home?
Just an hour and a half away from here on I-40, a little town called Henrietta, Oklahoma.
And how did you find out about the Secret Service? Why did you join ultimately?
I went to a small school in Central Illinois for my undergraduate degree program. And I'm this old, so President Reagan came back and gave the commencement address. And he was already out of office. And I was part of a Reagan scholarship program. And so I had an opportunity to meet with President Reagan and Mrs. Reagan the night before the commencement address. And so with that, as I was going to have dinner with them, they had to do a little background on me. And at the time, I didn't know anything about the Secret Service other than they protected the president. Well, the next day, as I'm getting ready to go to the commencement address, I forget my ticket. So I had to return back to my dorm room to get it. And along the way, a Secret Service agent stops me, which kind of spooked me because the night before they arrested someone for making a threat on President Reagan, a fellow student.
Okay.
And so as he stops me, I'm thinking, oh, no, what did I do? What did I cause a problem? Whatever else. And so it wasn't that. He just stopped and talked to me because he did part of my background, where he did my name check, rather. And with that, I was running track at the time, had pretty good grades. And so he stopped and asked me, what do I plan to do with my life? At the time, I had no idea I wanted to join the Secret Service or even thing in law enforcement. And so thereafter, he put the bug in my ear. And a few years down the road, I said, you know what? I don't want to do what I'm doing right now. And actually, I wanted to go in law enforcement because my uncle was the chief of police for my tribal police. And so I was like, you know, this is what I really want to do. And so I started application in 1995, unfortunately, just before the Oklahoma City bombing. And it took me a couple years to get in, but finally I made it in 1997.
Well, you brought up something interesting that, and one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, because of your unique background or your background with as a Native American, because you mentioned tribe. Would you mind talking to the listeners a little bit about that background of yours?
Okay. I'm a full-blood Muscogee Creek. I call myself just a Creek citizen. We are the fourth largest tribe in the continental United States at this time, which is around, give or take, 85,000 citizens. All of them don't live here in Oklahoma, but they are across the country. A majority here in Oklahoma, but we have a big contingency in California. Grew up in a little town called Henrietta, which is not just south of our capital, which is Okmulgee, Oklahoma. So I grew up, I didn't go to a Native American school. I went to the public schools, but there are Native American schools here in Oklahoma. But I grew up in Henrietta. But let me backtrack really quick. I did grow up in Dallas, first 9 years of my life. Then we decided to move back because of my dad's job. But with that being said, we still grew up knowing the language, the culture. So part of my identity is, for at least for myself, is I still speak Creek. My wife speaks Creek. We're both Creek citizens. And hopefully we can invest that into our granddaughters, which we have three of.
That's amazing. And I want to ask, what makes your tribe unique? How would you describe it?
What makes us unique is we still hold on to our culture. We still have, even though in a lot of tribes, and I don't want to point any other tribe out, but with that being said, we still hold on to our, maintain our language. We have a huge language division, which teaches our younger kids. We have competitions where it teaches them how to utilize language in a daily basis. The other part, we still maintain our traditions, our religious traditions, either whether it's on the Christian side or the traditional Muskogean side, which is what we call stomp dance, which happens typically during the summertime.
Thank you for sharing that. I think it's special to have you on to show the diversity that we have within the Secret Service. Mm-hmm. And to kind of follow that same vein, is there things that you do, are you, with your relationships with the tribal nations, and with your tribe, is there stuff that you've done with the Secret Service to help out as far as working with the tribes within Oklahoma?
Even when I was in recruiting division, I had some great supervisors. They allowed me to recruit where I wanted to go and to do what I thought was the best way to recruit, specifically Native Americans. When I was in recruiting division, when I started there in 2010, there was a White House initiative on tribal colleges and universities, which there are 35 domestic tribal colleges and universities here. SAC at the time allowed us to try to reach out to every one of them and try to attend recruiting events at those locations. One of the, for me, which I have really heart for, because my wife graduated from there, is a little tribal college called Bacon College in Muskogee, Oklahoma. Historically, it started out as an orphanage, then went to a trade school, all the way up to what it is currently now, to a four-year school. When I started in recruitment division, I reached out to them, because what I wanted, part of my goal was to increase the amount of Native Americans within the Secret Service. Bacon College has a criminal justice program, so that's one of the reasons why I reached out to them. We got to do a couple things with them, but since I came back to Oklahoma, like I think next week I'm going to go out there and speak to the criminal justice courses. But along with that same line, we've gone to other tribal colleges here in Oklahoma. We've actually done a lot of training for a lot of the tribal police departments here. And we actually just this year sent our first Native American law enforcement officer to our National Computer Forensics Institute.
Congratulations.
And I thought that was a big thing. One of the agents here who's on the XSAT program helped lead that charge. But now we're consistently sending them almost every quarter at least, some tribal entity to the NCFI.
When we were talking about doing the podcast, you had mentioned that you liaison, you've done work with Native American law enforcement to help support them from the Secret Service's side?
Absolutely. Kind of, this goes back a little ways. When I was in the polygraph program, we actually did a couple of polygraphs for National Center for Missing Explored Children relating to tribal, a couple of tribal cases. We actually did another polygraph for unsolved homicide. So even back in the polygraph, we reached out to the tribes here in Oklahoma and across the country as well, but we had a lot of response here from Oklahoma. But with that being said, currently, administration, at least the leadership here in Oklahoma City, has been great, allowing us to reach out to the tribes and try to bring them to our task force meetings, and we try to invite them to different trainings. And so with that being said, we assist on a lot of investigations. We don't try to go in there and say, hey, we're going to take over this investigation. We don't want that perception, but we want to lend as much assistance as we possibly can. So we've done computer forensics exams for tribes, cell phones, computers. We've also lent our assistance in interrogations and interviews. And so if a tribal law enforcement agency calls us, we're going to respond. And I think we've done a really good job all through the office. Every agent that's here in Oklahoma City and in Tulsa has tremendously responded. There's times where a tribal casino calls and they said, hey, we found this bag, kind of one example. We looked in, there was a computer and there was counterfeit money in there. Fortunately, agent was able to respond out there. And they made a couple of arrests out of that. And actually, they found the counterfeit plant there. So we do respond to this, to the tribal law enforcement agencies.
And this is through the task force that you're a part of?
Yes, through the task force. And actually, here in Oklahoma, we have a great relationship with the law enforcement community. And so a lot of times they know our personal numbers.
Okay.
And so a lot of times they can just reach out directly to us as opposed to trying to call and go to the task force. So they'll call agents directly.
And you are, and forgive my ignorance, you're involved with the ECTF and being able to work with the law enforcement in Oklahoma City and in Oklahoma to help support those law enforcement partners?
Absolutely, yes.
So the ECTF, I believe we had Mr. Special Agent Mark Grants mm-hmm. on to talk about the ECTF, and that was at the Washington Field Office. Can you talk about what might be unique here for Oklahoma City and its ECTF, what you see out here?
One of the unique parts of Oklahoma is because we do have 35 major tribes here. Even though there's more tribes represented here, there's 35 to 37 major tribes here. And with that, we also have to deal with areas of responsibility. Because when you go into a tribe, when you go into tribal land, you're going into a sovereign nation. And so when we do that, we have to remind ourselves, this is not a state case. This is going to be either adjudicated in a federal courtroom or it's going to be adjudicated in a tribal courtroom. And so we have to make sure we know what their policies, at least on the tribal side, what their policies regarding evidence handling, also what they require from us in terms of our electronic crimes reports. And sometimes we have to sit down with them and explain to them what our report format is, and this is why the reasons why we do it, which is also an area that we look at as well for the NCFI. We also tell them, let them know that NCFI is just not for the criminal investigators, it's also for the judges, for the prosecutors who may hear these cases or may assist in writing affidavits and warrants. And so we want to put that out there as well. But going back, here we have to remind ourselves our jurisdictional boundaries. Yes, we can go almost any place that we want to, but with that being said, we have to understand that the judicial system for a tribe is different than a county or for a state court.
Was it one of the reasons why you chose Oklahoma City Field Office? Like, kind of going back with your arrival here, was there any reason why you chose Oklahoma City, or did the service send you here?
It's because this was home. Okay. For to be very truthful, this is home. As I mentioned, my family's here, my wife's family's here, and so this is where we want to come back to and hopefully retire. But with all that being said, for me, coming here to help Native American tribes is very important for me on a personal level, because tribes have crimes committed on their lands all the time. Sometimes they may not have all the resources available to them, but with that being said, we're here to help support their law enforcement agencies as well. And again, a lot of times Secret Service, we especially during protection times, we request a lot of assets from police departments. No different here, but this is one way that we can give back to them and serve the communities, offer up polygraph exams, computer forensic exams, age progression photos, digitizing of photos and things along those lines. So it's a way that we can give back to the community. And for me specifically, because I am Creek, to the tribal communities as well.
I do have a question. I don't know how often these happen, but were you ever on a protectees detail to within any of the tribe land?
Yeah, a couple of years ago here in Oklahoma City, the Prime Minister of Ireland went to Durand, Oklahoma, which actually is the heart of the Choctaw Nation.
What was the particular reason the Prime Minister of Ireland would visit?
Historically, during the potato famine in Ireland, the tribe raised money and sent it over to them.
Oh, wow.
And so this has been going on for years over in Ireland. I can't remember what city it's in, but there's actually a statue there in memorization of that. And so when he came over, that was part of the thank you part. Even though it happened in the 1800s, he came over here again to acknowledge the tribe's willingness to provide funds, even though they didn't have a lot of funds at the time. And I can't remember how much money it was, but it really wasn't a lot, but it was more of the acknowledgement of the gratitude towards the tribe for doing that. And so he was driving up from Texas, from Dallas, and going to the tribal land there. And so with all that being said, not only did we have to deal with the state police, the local police, but we also had to deal with the tribal police. And with that being said, when you go into tribal land, laws are different. Mm-hmm. And so we had to remind our agents, here's what can happen if there's a shooting situation. Here's a situation that could happen if we're in a car wreck. You know, we had to remind them, tribal laws are different. This is not a state entity, and state agencies, unfortunately, don't have any jurisdictional powers on tribal land. So we had to rely solely on the tribal police. And the tribal police they were great during the advance. They were great during the visit. And we just had to remind ourselves, hey, it's almost like going to a foreign trip. And actually, because it was, other than we didn't have to take passports with us. But aside from that, you know, we had to remind ourselves, this is a sovereign nation that we're entering, and we have to be respectful of that as well.
Yeah, I think, again, I just want to reemphasize my time within the Secret Service. It's always important to know where jurisdictions mm-hmm. end and lie. So I never thought about that, and that's a really interesting perspective when having to do that kind of stuff, because I don't know how often protectees go into those areas. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
And with that being said, there's actually a case before the Supreme Court, which potentially could change Eastern Oklahoma. Very quick historical, the five civilized tribes, which are the Cherokees, Creeks, Chickasaws, Choctaws, and Seminole, aren't originally from Oklahoma. They were brought from the southeast in the early 1800s, and they reestablished our tribes here. Now, with that being said, there's a dispute now. Are those lands still tribal, or are they state of Oklahoma?
Mm-hmm.
And currently there's a court case before the Supreme Court that's already been heard, just waiting for the decision to be rendered, which potentially could affect most of Eastern Oklahoma in terms of not just the residents living there, but how we handle law enforcement. Again, if it's a tribal land, different rules that apply to the criminal justice system. And as well as last campaign, we had a lot of protectees come to Oklahoma. So it could also potentially change how we do our protection, because that will never change. We'll do it the same way no matter what. But we have to, again, reinforce we're on a sovereign nation at that point in time, specifically like when they go to Tulsa, because, again, that's going to be Cherokee Nation as well as Creek Nation. And so a protectee goes there. Yes, they're going to a major city in Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma, but it's also going to be tribal reservational, tribal boundaries. And so that potentially could have a little effect on how we handle our law enforcement responsibilities as well as our protective responsibilities.
I think to some people it may be obvious, but however, you know the nuances of working with the tribes here as a Native American yourself. Can you talk about some of the benefits of you being Native American within the Secret Service and being able to be that bridge between law enforcement organizations, between the Secret Service and the tribal law enforcement?
As I mentioned earlier, my uncle, was the former chief of our tribal police. Currently, my older brother is also the deputy chief of our tribal police. And being here back in the early 90s, I got to know through my uncle and through other means a lot of the tribal entities here. And I worked with them even back in the early 90s when I first started here in Tulsa and Oklahoma City. So I maintained those relationships through the years. And so coming back here, they had a fresh face or an old friend to call. Whereas some of them may not have been here, but they passed my name on. And so it's not unusual for me to get a phone call saying, hey, so-and-so gave me your name and your number. Hopefully you didn't mind me calling. Absolutely doesn't bother me. And so with that, it allows me to understand, too, or to hopefully teach the other agents here who come here, specifically the newer agents. Oklahoma, we have well over 200 casinos here, all of them tribally operated and owned. And so when you walk into them, you have to be able to understand, once again, you're in a sovereign nation. Then two, in some tribes they don't have a police department, so they rely on the Bureau of Indian Affairs police. And so there's those little nuances that I know just growing up here and knowing the people, what have you, that when I go out there with another agent, I kind of explain, here's the reason why we call the tribal police as opposed to the BIA, or here's the reason why we call the Bureau of Indian Affairs as opposed to the tribe, because the tribe may not have a tribal police. Or with that being said, in some casinos here in Oklahoma, the law enforcement on the property, they're not part of the tribal police. They're on security force. And so it's just getting those little nuances. And also, too, it's a way for, again, there's hundreds of casinos here. Like any other business, there's always some sort of crime taking place, whether it's passing counterfeit money, identity theft, credit cards being used that unauthorized being used. And so when we walk in there, we bring our expertise to them. And hopefully, as I mentioned before, we don't say we're taking this over. We want to be that liaison. We want to be those friends to them and allow them to do their jobs, but allow us to assist in the same process. Being Creek, I think what helps me in terms of being a Creek is that there's not a lot of Native Americans in federal law enforcement. And so that I bring that unique perspective of knowing my language, knowing the culture, knowing the little idiosyncrasies of tribes, if I can say that, because I bring that perspective to it. And going there, I know that it's not always business. Sometimes you have to start out with the conversations. Like, for example, if I go to a Creek place, oh, who's your brother? Who's your family members? Gives me a little more bona fides with them if they don't really understand who I am. Like, for in the Creek language, for in the Creek culture, rather, they always ask who your parents are. They don't ask you your name initially. They say, who do you belong to, basically?
Okay.
And so that allows them to understand who you are, where you come from, and a little about your family background. And once they understand that, then you start the conversations. There's maybe a little joking, maybe a little food offered, so forth and so on. And it's like going to any other place in the whole world. You understand the culture. You have a little better business relationships, better personal relationships after that point.
So in 2010, you were selected for a special emphasis program, and I think you may have touched on this earlier in the podcast. Can you just talk a little bit about it to the listeners, kind of explain what that program was?
Currently, I'm the special emphasis program manager for American Indians, Alaska Natives within the Secret Service. I started that just after I left the vice president's detail and when I reported to the recruitment division. At that time, the White House had an initiative for the tribal colleges and universities, and the SAC at the time was a very huge proponent of us going out and doing our outreach. And with that being said, he didn't want us just to go out there and hand out brochures. He wanted us to basically sell the Secret Service, and sell not in a negative sense, but to present it in a way that people typically haven't heard it. Because most people, when they think of the Secret Service, they think of us talking in our sleeves, walking down the road with the president, or standing guard by a door. But they don't understand that we are investigative service since 1865. Mm-hmm. And so with that, in terms of the tribal college universities, we actually were able to go out to a few of them in Montana, Arizona, New Mexico, here in Oklahoma, and a few other places as well. And with that, we didn't just, again, hand out brochures. We talked about, here's what we're looking for, here's what our jobs are, and we actually would go out in teams of three. There was a uniform division officer, a special agent, and someone from the administrative professional technical side of the house. And so we would each talk about what we did and the roles and responsibilities. I thought we did a pretty good job in doing the outreach, specifically to Native American tribes. Forensic Services Division did a great job because they helped us create a couple of posters. University of North Dakota, we gave one to them specifically.
Okay.
And with that being said, I thought we did, as I mentioned, I think we did a really good job with that. Even though we didn't have the numbers coming in, mm-hmm. but I think people are now hearing about us and starting to say, hey, maybe that is a viable option, because most, and I'm going to speak from a personal side, most Native Americans don't see the Secret Service as a position or as a job that they can acquire, that they can get to, because they think of something that's a huge barrier, whatever that barrier in their mind may be. They don't see that. And being a Native American and being used on a couple of posters, they say, hey, maybe I can. I'm not some Secret Service didn't hire some actor or some model to come and sit on a poster for them. Mm-hmm. They actually used real Native Americans who were within the Secret Service. And I think that brought a fresher perspective to when we went out to the tribal colleges and universities. And they said, hey, that's you who's sitting on a poster. How did you do it? What did you do? So I was able to tell them a little about myself, my education, my background, so forth, so on, and what I've been able to do, been allowed to do here within the Secret Service. And with that being said, one of the things that I think for me, which was a huge, I don't know what you want to call it, but I thought was really great, when I was allowed to speak at the White House for President Obama's initiative for Native American students. I forgot how many students came there, but I was one of the three presenters there at the White House. That's amazing. I thought that was one of the coolest things in the whole world, because short little feeling cool like I was a rock star, because kids walked up to me, hey, can I take a picture with you? Mm-hmm. Or can I get your autograph? And, you know, I don't know why they would want my autograph, because on eBay may go for a penny. But it was one of those things, can we take a picture with you? Because we never seen a Native American standing next to the vice president or standing to the president, because there's a picture I use in some of my presentations where I'm standing post mm-hmm. on the next to the stage with Vice President Biden. And they said, that's really cool. Can we take a picture with you? And again, these students came from all across the country. They were high school students and college students. And so it put a bug in their ear saying, hey, maybe this is a viable option for me to work in the future. Maybe I don't want to just be nothing negative about tribal police or local police or anything along those lines. By no stretch of imagination am I saying that. But it's another viable option for them to say, hey, I can travel the world. I can be on Air Force One or Air Force Two, Marine One, Marine Two, or travel the different countries that we go to every year. And so... So for me, in terms of the special emphasis program manager, I think that's important that we stay out there. Again, we don't have a lot of numbers, but nationwide, federal wide, there's not a lot of Native Americans within law enforcement community. Hopefully we can improve that. I think we will. Again, as the younger generation grows up, they're not more inclined, and again, like my generation, we're more inclined to stay closer where we grew up. Mm-hmm. Now, because of the internet, ability to see things around the world, yeah, now they're willing to say, hey, I am willing to take this job and move to Washington, D.C., move to Oakland, California, Miami, Florida, Houston, Texas, then, and do what a special agent does, or stay in D.C., do what a uniform division officer does, or be a fingerprint analyst like they do in Forensic Services Division in D.C. So when we go out and talk about the Secret Service, again, we're just not talking about the gun carriers. We're talking about the non-gun carriers as well, because not everybody wants to be a gun carrier. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, at least, again, going from a personal perspective, a lot of Native Americans, they go to school to be attorneys, doctors, teachers, so forth, so on. Careers that you can find within the Secret Service. And so we talk about that. You don't have to be a gun carrier. You can do what you want to do in terms of being a psychologist, being a nurse, or whatever else that positions that we do have within the Secret Service. So I think when we emphasize that, I think we're bringing up, hopefully in the future, we'll see more Native Americans apply, and not just apply, but get accepted and actually take the job and stay with us for a while. The Secret Service has been, at least Special Emphasis Program, as well as here in Oklahoma City, has been great in allowing not just me, but other employees to go out to Native Americans and do the recruiting, do the outreach. Because I think that's great. Because Riverside used to go to Native American school out there, a historical Native American school. Even before I came back to Oklahoma, Oklahoma City was still doing outreach to Native American community, like the Jim Thorpe Games. They did a recruiting event there for those students who arrived at the, for those quasi, not quasi, for the type of Olympic Games they were doing there.
Willie, do you know the exact number of Native Americans that are in the Secret Service today?
We have 17 total across law enforcement and non-law enforcement positions.
Okay. Do you go often? Do they ask you to come out to speak about your experiences?
Yeah, we get asked to speak. I get asked for myself to come out and speak to different Native American colleges and universities and programs around here.
And if I was a Native American that wanted to request you, or at least a Native American organization or tribe that would like to request you to speak, well, how would they go about doing that?
Typically, they would call me directly. Again, for some reason, my phone number is out there. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, it hasn't been published. But with that being said, they'll call me. And basically what I ask them to do, hey, just send me an email so I can give it to my bosses so okay. They know I'm not just going to Dunkin' Donuts and sitting there for a couple hours eating donuts and drinking coffee, so they know what I'm doing. But here in Oklahoma City, the bosses have been great since I've been here in 2005. Actually, the former SAC and ASAC, because of what they did in allowing us to go out to do not just the recruiting events, but also loan our talents in terms of our criminal investigative experiences to their police department. And it's a huge thing within the Native American community. The chief of the tribe actually gave them and presented them blankets, Pendleton blankets.
Oh, wow.
Which is, again, within the Native American community, and I use that term loosely, within Native Americans, when you're given a blanket, that's a huge honor. And because of what the former SAC and the former ASAC did, because they allowed us to go out there and do presentations. One of the biggest things that we did, at least for this one particular tribe, was we did a whole day's training of electronic crimes. We took a couple of the electronic crime agents. They took the computers out and showed them things on the web. We presented them different tools that are available to them from us that they can use through us. And that's how we started sending other people to the NCFI. Mm. But because of that, not only did we do these presentations, but we assisted in investigations. I forgot how many, I can't tell you how many cell phones our guys here have done for tribes,
okay,
or computers they've done analysis for. And good thing for us, and I can say this about our guys here who do the forensic exams, they do a great turnaround time. So they're not waiting months to get a report back. It may be a couple of weeks, maybe a little bit longer, but they're not waiting, you know, months to get something back, and they really appreciate that because not only do, like for us, our cases, we have to send stuff to the U.S. Attorney's Office or the District Attorney's Office, and they want it within a reasonable amount of time, so do the tribal attorneys as well.
Okay.
And so when we are able to do that for them, they that really helps them out in their investigations, their prosecutions. And again, with the leadership that we've had, not just here in Oklahoma City, but at least the headquarters side too, going out and going to Society of American and Government Employees meetings or NALEA meetings, National Native American Law Enforcement Association meetings. The amount of support that we received since I've been in the Secret Service has been phenomenal. And when I talk to some of my other SCPM counterparts at other agencies, they may not get that same level of support. And some of them, unfortunately, have not received that same level of support. But here in Secret Service, it's been phenomenal.
Willie, how does it feel to be the first Native American Secret Service agent to be on the podcast?
I thought it was one of the coolest things in the whole world. when after you wrote me, asked me if I would do that, I was thinking, that's one of the coolest things that I could ever do.
Oh.
I went home and told my wife. My wife's like, what's a podcast? So, so I told her about it, and she was, oh, are you really going to do that? I said, yes. She said, you have to do it. You really need to make sure you talk slow because I have a tendency to speak fast. And so she was giving me her little warnings.
She was trying to coach, you know, or she was coaching you,
should say. Okay. So, and I told my brother. My brothers are, they're like, where do we get the podcast from? Is it out? Yeah, I said, no, we got to go record it first. and so to me, this is one of the coolest things that I could be asked to do. And I appreciate that. And I really like it because, again, from a personal perspective, I'm going to try to sell this story or sell this podcast to not just my family, but my tribal members. And hopefully it gets passed on to other individuals as well, because it's an opportunity. It's a platform for me. This not the platform for Willie Wynn in of itself, but hey, the Secret Service is a viable option if you're Native American. There's other law enforcement agencies out there that they are more attracted to, or at least seem to be more attracted to. And again, a lot of it's just because of their own barriers. The barriers saying, hey, maybe that's not something I can do, but it is something that's very viable out there. And hopefully, with that being said, use this as a little recruiting tool as well. Because if I can do this, come from a small town, coming from the background I grew up in, a very rural community, at least for me. And next thing you know, I'm standing next to the vice president. Next thing I'm the number one whip on the vice president's detail on Marine 2. And one of the stories I always share when I go out to and talk to Native American students is about my wife. When I left the vice president's detail, I got the opportunity to come back and do our exit photo. And so obviously I took my wife with me. The photo really, from a personal perspective, wasn't for me, it was for her. Because after 4 years of all the travel, being away, all the things that she gave as well. Because again, when I'm not home, she has to take care of everything. And so next thing you know, we're standing there in the vice president's office. And I didn't tell my wife I was going to say this because I didn't expect to say this. But with that being said, she started getting very emotional. And so the vice president's standing there, and she's starting to quiver a little bit. And so I said, Mr. Vice President, this is probably your biggest fan, which at the time she was. Mm-hmm. This was Vice President Biden. And he said, oh, really? And so out of the public's eye, he didn't have to do this. He was under no obligation because he didn't get anything out of it, at least in the press-wise. He spent for the next 10 minutes talking to my wife.
Oh, wow.
In his office, he had pictures of his grandkids. So they start talking about not just his grandkids, but my grandkids, okay. Talking about different things, and he gave her a little tour. And what was supposed to be in a minute picture turned into 10 to 15 minutes by him being so gracious to her.
It's very nice.
And always, and I sometimes I shared a photo because it's also a study in psychology. Because even though I was with him for 2 years, his body angle was more directed towards my wife.
Okay.
And again, not so much he's trying to push me away, and that's not what I'm trying to say. It's just, it was a thank you, because he understood what she gave away too for my 4 years on the vice president's detail.
There was like a focus. He was nobody else was in the room kind of.
Yeah. Thing. And so he didn't have to do it. And again, my wife, after we left, she started crying. She goes, who would ever thought, because she went to in Native American boarding school.
Okay.
In Tahlequah, Oklahoma. And she said, who would ever thought I'd ever be standing in the White House or in the vice president's office taking a picture with him? And so we got that mounted. So it's you know, that's one of her favorite pictures.
Willie, if you weren't a special agent in the Secret Service, what would you feel you'd be doing instead of it?
If I wasn't doing this, I'd be working for my tribe in one form or some capacity, whether it's law enforcement. Before I came on the job, I was working for our housing authority, doing back some sort of quasi investigations. As much as I loved working for my tribe, I can't, after being here 22 years, I can't imagine doing anything else though.
Well, Special Agent Willie Wind, I appreciate your time coming on the show, talking about your history, your heritage, your culture, and being able to speak on work that you've done with the tribal nations here. So again, thank you very much.
And I'd like to say thank you, but I'm going to say Mado, which is how we say thank you in Creek.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Standing Post. For more information about the Secret Service or how to join, please visit www.secretservice.gov. And until next time, listeners, stay vigilant.